Mamma Mia subscribers, you've been asking and we've been listening. Now, you can get all of your exclusive subscriber audio on Apple Podcasts. That includes everything from bonus episodes of your favourite pods to exclusive segments to all of our audio series.
To link your Mamma Mia subscription to Apple Podcasts, open the Mamma Mia Out Loud page in your Apple Podcasts app and follow the prompts, or head to help.mamamia.com.au.
Just a warning, this episode of The Split deals with issues of domestic violence. If you need help, contact 1-800-RESPECT now. When it comes to divorce, people don't always play nice. So what do you do if there's a custody dispute or your ex is being really difficult and obstructive around a property settlement? What happens when those kind of things that could be worked out through a mediation are actually being used as some sort of punishment or way to stay engaged in a relationship and not move on? How do you move past that? And what happens when things get nasty?
You're sort of clinging onto this fantasy man that actually doesn't exist, because the true guy is the one that he's showing you.
From Mamma Mia, I'm Mandy Nolan, and you're listening to The Split, the adult guide to separation and divorce. A long time ago, I found myself living in a relationship where, now I look back, I see it as domestic violence. At the time, I didn't. I think it's because at the time there wasn't a lot of the language around what domestic violence was. And I had got to a point where I guess I'd lost confidence in myself, and the negative things my partner had been telling me actually started to ring true for me. So I really doubted that what was happening wasn't my fault. I felt like I'd sort of instigated it, even though in my gut I knew it wasn't okay. I'd also grown up in a family with an alcoholic father and lived in domestic violence for the beginning of my childhood. So in a way, it was normalised. I do remember, though, the day things changed for me and when I got out. It was a bit like if you've ever watched those Indiana Jones films, and you know when the door's coming down and you've got to get out because otherwise there's something behind the door, like there's a monster or there's a huge amount of water to come through and there's a door coming down and he has to roll under and he just gets through. Well, that's what it felt like for me. I had this moment of clarity one day where I woke up and I actually said to myself, it stops now. And I felt like I rolled out under that door. I left and I didn't go back.
I left my marriage about 7 years ago because of domestic violence. I'm probably now in the best place that I've been since leaving it. My story was that I was silent about the abuse and neglect that went on in my marriage to my family and to lots of people. There was only a very small group of my intimate circle that knew what was going on, along with professionals that we'd been seeing. I should have left years before I did. I think it was, you know, I'd married for life. I believed the lies that all of the behaviours were a result of, you know, me not doing enough, not this, not that. There was always an excuse for the behaviours, and I always took that excuse as, you know, it was always woven back into something I hadn't done. And yeah, and I accepted that. I accepted that I was the reason for the behaviours, the conduct, the words. And, you know, I guess having exposure to so many, you know, professionals had me aware that I actually wasn't responsible for those words, conduct and behaviour, that he was.
So what if things get really nasty, and you need to leave now? In Australia, every week, one woman dies at the hands of her partner or her ex-partner. When Vivian McGrath was in her early 20s, she found herself living with what she thought was the perfect man. But as time went on, she found that relationship wasn't what she thought, and that for her survival and the survival of her infant son, she needed to find a way to get out. So Vivian, tell me a little bit about your story.
Well, it didn't start turning nasty immediately. It was one of these really gradual things. You know, I always say I didn't fall in love with a violent man. I fell in love with a guy who later happened to turn violent. And it's really significant that because, you know, people always say, why did you stay in a violent relationship? Because, you know, when you first meet these people, they're really, you know, charismatic and attractive, and they say everything you want to hear and sweep you off your feet with all this love bombing. And it was a gradual drip, drip, drip. So, you know, he'd sort of lose his temper and out of nowhere would get really angry, and then it would go quite quickly. So you think, what did I do to cause that? You think maybe you caused it, or they'll storm off in a rage, and then gradually would build up to just a little bit of a push here and a shove there, and again it is over in a flash. And so you do start to think, I caused that. And then there's a lot of emotional abuse and manipulation that goes along with it, so that you start believing them when they say that you provoked it, you're to blame. So the violence crept up on me. But at the time, but I realize now, I was actually a very young, vulnerable girl who had low self-esteem, and I was easy to be manipulated. So it's a combination of me minimizing it, because there's so much shame. Mm. You don't want to say to yourself, I'm staying in this abusive relationship. And then there's also a lot of gaslighting that goes on, which is that expression for when they are telling you, oh, you're exaggerating it, you're making it up. And that is really powerful manipulation. So you believe it. You don't think it's violence.
Someone once said to me in a dysfunctional relationship that I had, they said, bury hope. And it took me a while to understand what that actually meant. Was that crucial for you in moving forward, to get rid of this feeling of hope that you could restore a normative relationship? Because when you look back, it must seem, you know, irrational that you could do it, because it is crazy, yeah.
I can see why people say, why did you stay? Why didn't she just leave? You know, but you were in, I call it the fantasy bond. And you are so bonded in this fantasy that you project onto them, because they give you that fantasy when you first meet them, that they're the only person for you. They're going to give you everything you want. And when you're an insecure, vulnerable girl and you have someone telling you, I'm going to love you more than anyone else, you want to believe that. So you project this fantasy onto them, and they also keep telling you, you know, narcissistic types are very good at telling you all sorts of rubbish, and they do the opposite. So I always say to people, don't listen to what people say, watch what they do. And so, you know, they're telling you, oh, it's all going to be okay. We're going to have this wonderful life. If we just have a baby, then it's all going to be wonderful. So I then fall pregnant to a guy who's been violent towards me, and thinking that's going to fix everything, because that's what, you know, you want to believe. It's this fantasy. And so you're sort of clinging onto this fantasy man that actually doesn't exist, because the true guy is the one that he's showing you, not the one he's telling you he is. And also you've got this fantasy of this dream life that you're going to have together, and you're clinging onto that hope. So as you say, you've got to bury that hope, and you've got to, the veil's got to be lifted off, and you've got to see it for what it is.
So how did that happen for you, Vivian? How did the veil get lifted when you're so deeply entrenched in what often seems to me, it's like a Stockholm syndrome, isn't it, where you're so kind of stuck in there with what they're going through? How did you manage to have that flash of, I suppose, reality or insight to get you out?
I remember, you know, by then I'd had a child, and I started to think, do I want to bring my child up into this? Do I, you know, if I don't break this cycle, then my child is going to end up becoming a violent man, possibly, or become someone who also repeats the pattern and become me, the victim, you know. And I don't know where, I don't know how I had such insight so young, but my son saved my life. I just thought, somebody, I don't know what it was. I always say, when you need to know the answer, it comes, you know, like that old saying, when the student's ready, the teacher comes. And at some point in that time, I heard the Serenity Prayer, and I'm not religious at all, but somebody just said, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And it was like this light bulb went off in my head, and I thought, I've been trying to change this guy and this relationship for years. I've got to the point where I've lost me in the process. I don't know who I am anymore. I missed me. I missed being this fun, funny, happy-go-lucky person. And instead, I was this broken shell. And I want a me back. And I suddenly thought, I can't change him.
I just wanted to go back, was just to get how physically you left, what happened, you know, how you got the baby. Just, are you able to talk us through the physical thing of actually going, how you got out the house, where you went to be safe? That part of the process.
What I did was, I over this period of months, before I realized I've got to get out now, I put in a safety mechanism so that the moment I fled, I could flee. And that was that I started saving whatever money I could. I would always say to people, if you can set up a separate bank account and start just putting money away, get all your really valuable documents that you need and give them to a trusted friend, is something that if you need to, you know, you need to go and you have to go in a hurry, then all those things that you really need. And to me, furniture, nothing was important. I didn't care about anything. I just wanted my safety and my baby. So things like important documents, they were the only things I cared about. And I then found a place. I was in a fortunate position, and I know there's a lot of people who aren't. But if you're not, then research refuges or find a friend that you could go and stay with. I was very lucky that I was able to set up a place that I knew I could go. And then once I had that safe exit in place, there was one night where I thought it was all getting very dangerous. It was very frightening. And I knew he had to go to work. And so I knew there was also a period of hours that I had time. And I got a friend to come with me so that if he came home, there was a person there. And I wasn't there on my own. And we basically just packed whatever we could fit into her, into my tiny little Honda Civic, got my baby and just fled. And every second of that drive, it was like the longest drive of my life, because I was looking over my shoulder the whole time. It was just terrifying. Yeah. It was terrifying. But planning that exit was the best thing I ever did.
That's great. Thank you so much, Vivian. That was great. It's a powerful story. If you need help, please call 1-800-RESPECT or visit Westpac Assist on 1-800-067-497.
Move by Mamma Mia is the exercise app for anybody, anywhere. And in case you missed it, we dropped a brand new stretching collection that can be used to improve mobility and bookend your favourite sweat sessions. Mamma Mia subscribers get unlimited access to Move, and we drop new workouts every single week. If you're on the hunt for movement that makes you feel good, head to move.mamamia.com.au and use the code MOVE10 to get $10 off a yearly subscription.
Joining us now is Anne-Marie Rice. She's a mediator. You would have heard from her in episode 2. She joins us again now to actually talk about when things have got nasty and how you might be able to use mediation to get yourselves back on the same page and de-escalate the danger. So Anne-Marie, can you tell me what happens and if mediation is useful in instances where there are incidents of domestic violence, or, you know, things have gotten nasty, or financial violence in a family? Does mediation work in those situations?
A carefully crafted and managed mediation can work in those situations. But power imbalance that manifests itself in all sorts of ways, including domestic and family violence, physical control, financial control and isolation, needs to be really carefully and early in the process identified and then managed. Because if we're not negotiating on a level playing field, there's a very significant challenge involved in mediation. But sometimes which of the aspects are able to be dealt with and which need a determination rather than negotiation. But interestingly, most people, regardless of the dynamic, prefer to make decisions about their own life rather than have a decision imposed on them. But family dispute resolution practitioners, who are mediators working in the parenting space, are very skilled in identifying the family violence dynamic and are obliged under the legislation to make some decisions about whether or not it's appropriate to have a mediation. But they carefully manage, and mediation can work really well, depending on the particular dynamic and the skill of the mediator.
Thank you so much. To find out how to get in contact with Anne-Marie Rice, check the links on our show notes.
I separated 5 years ago, and a few of my coping strategies are to remember that I can only control myself. I can't control the behaviour of my ex. That's taken me a really long time to come to terms with that and understand it. My other one is to treat the situation as a business, to reply to messages and emails as if I was replying professionally, to sit on them, think about them, take my time replying, ask a friend to read over them, and take all emotion out of my messages. I will quite often take a couple of days to process my ex's emails and text messages to myself. That way I don't respond with anger, sadness, fear, just the facts. And I don't think that anyone should be rushing or jumping into replying to messages if they're feeling super emotional.
Now it's time for the part of the show where you get your questions answered. Nama Winston is a former lawyer and she's been happily divorced for 10 years now. Nama, today's listener wants to know, how can you help a friend who's going through a particularly nasty divorce?
I think the first thing to do is just to make it really clear that you love them no matter what, and that your friendship is really important and it's something that they can count on, which is something that they probably going to need at a time of quite a lot of uncertainty for them. So, you know, let them know I'm here for you no matter what. You're not going to judge them. You're not going to assume that you know what they're going through. They don't need your approval on what they're doing. You are a sounding board for them. I think that's really important. The other thing I found was that speaking from experience can really help too. So if you've got some experience to offer, offer that to them and say, well, look, this is what I did in this situation. This could potentially work for you. Like, I had a friend who came to me and said, my partner, he just won't leave. I've asked him to leave. I don't know what to do. I don't feel I should have to leave with my son, but he's not leaving. So we were at this stalemate. And so I said to her, well, the same thing happened to me. And it took for my sister to come along and say to me, you're going to have to leave because he's not leaving. She could see that clearly. So I could offer her, I could offer my friend that advice and say, well, look, this is what happened to me. And I did have to concede and say, right, well, we've reached a stalemate. And if I want to pursue this, if I want to pursue this separation, I'm going to have to be the one to leave. And so I could offer that to her, and that was really helpful to her because I wasn't telling her what to do. I was just saying, this is what I did.
I think that's really helpful. What about in situations too, Nama, where, and this has happened to me at times, when you kind of get dragged in as a friend into, and some of the nasty divorces make you even feel as a friend sometimes that you could even become at risk, particularly mm-hmm. if you're called to give evidence mm-hmm. or in those situations. Like I did have a friend that went through a situation where I had both of them ringing me mm-hmm. and telling me different things. Mm-hmm. And it was really confusing. Like in the end, I ended up having to say, you know what? She's my friend. Whether she's lying or telling the truth, I'm going to just listen to her. I'm going to have to ask you to stop calling me. And I actually did feel a little bit frightened in that process because I did not know what was going on between these two, but I couldn't turn away. Like, it's, do you just have to trust your gut? Do you have to, as a friend, like I didn't even know. I felt so perplexed about what I was supposed to do.
I think you did the right thing. You followed your instincts, but also your reaction could have been, well, I'm not choosing a side. And I've known people who've done this, and they've just remained absolutely neutral. But I think you drew a line, and you did pick a side. You knew you wanted to continue this friendship, and you wanted to continue the support to support your friend, and so you had to say to her partner, "That's enough." And that was a really gutsy thing to do, and I think that was the right thing to do.
Yeah, because what came out later was that she had been living in horrendous domestic violence, but she actually hadn't told me about because there was a whole lot of other stuff masking that. And I'm so glad in the end I made that call, because to actually say, stop calling me.
So you listen to your instincts, because you could have quite easily have said, this is too much, you're both putting me through too much, and withdrawn yourself from the situation. But your instincts told you one of those parties needed your support, and you chose wisely.
Thanks so much, Nama. If you have a question, email podcast@mamamia.com.au or ask us in our closed Facebook group. Just search The Split in Facebook. That's it for The Split this week. Next week on The Split, our final episode, Starting Over. The Split is produced by Eliza Ratliff for Mamma Mia. I'm Mandy Nolan, and if you want more information about separation, head to mamamia.com.au.